Asylum Dialogues is a verbatim play developed by Ice and Fire Theatre from interviews with people seeking asylum in the UK and their British friends to explore the transformations created by their encounters with each other. Asylum Dialogues is currently touring the UK as part of Ice and Fire's outreach programme, Actors for Human Rights.
She should be here by now. Sorry about this.
I rang her half an hour ago. I said, are you on your way? She said, yep, I'm coming.
I got held up. She drives me stark raving mad. I spent all my life working by time. Oh, there you are.
Oh, traffic man, the bus, the train. Sorry.
This is Angela. Yeah, she's a lovely lady, apart from not knowing how to tell the bleeding time. Getting to know Angela, well, you could call it my Road to Damascus experience. There I was, just a so-called normal working man, accounts manager of a Birmingham engineering company, who until that day, I must be honest, was one of the many who said, send them all home, it's an English country, they shouldn't be here taking all our money. Then this damned woman, Angela, turns up to clean my office, turns the world upside down. It's only much later I found out what a rotten life Angela had had and why she had to leave Jamaica. Angela crossed the road one day to buy a loaf and got acid thrown in her eye, blinded her in one eye. It was a gang that did it. It's all tied up with politics. The political parties champion different areas. They give money and guns to local gangs to harass people to vote for them.
Each gang is a power unto themselves. Like I'm living on this road, you can't come here. This is our border. Anyone they catch from this side or that side, dead.
Anyway, Angela reported the attack to the police. But one of the officers in the police station was an uncle of the person who blinded her. He told the gang that Angela was a police informer and they threatened to kill her.
Whenever anything happened to you there, you can't go to the station. If you go to the station, you're gonna lose.
So Angela had to hide her kids with relatives and friends. She was only 25, but she'd already got 6 kids, the first from rape at 13, after which she was thrown out on the street. Angela went into hiding. 10 years she spent in hiding, moving from place to place.
I don't come from a rich family, so my family couldn't just go and buy a ticket and give it to me, you understand? I had to just wait. After going into hiding, there was a time that I got shot, and my sister said, I have to do something to get you out of here. So she got an invitation letter from a young lady here in England and paid £200 for it. And she bought me the ticket, and then I go.
So that's how Angela got to England and ended up working for our subcontracted cleaning company.
If I knew about asylum, I would have said something about it when I arrived. I would have just told them what I fled from. I didn't know what to say about it, you understand, for somebody like me who left school at the age of 13. How am I going to know what asylum is? So I had to just try and find work, but it was difficult because I had no papers. I only knew John to say hello to, but he always said I was the best cleaner he ever had.
She's the only one who ever cleaned the bottom of my chair. So when her boss wanted to sack her, I made a fuss.
A woman I used to live with started demanding money from me. I said, that's okay, but show me on paper what you think I owe you. No, she says you're going to make trouble for me. So she told my boss I had no papers and I lost my job. And then she assaulted me. And she did it in front of the law. In front of the officer she assaulted me.
Smashed a bottle in her face?
Yeah. And it's not once. She hit me in my face about 4 times. 4 times over my sick eye. And then they released her. Not me, her. I thought, what's going on? They just cautioned her and want to send me back to Jamaica. That's when my friend called John, because she knew John helped me before.
That was the only reason she rang me. She probably thought, there's a soft touch. So therefore we'll try him. After Angela was sacked, I'd gone round to see her. She hadn't eaten for 3 days. She looked absolutely dreadful. So I went out, bought her a pizza or something. And because she hadn't got any papers, no one would employ her. I used to go round once a week, give her a parcel of food. And that's how a friend met me.
I think God just inspired the girl to call you that day. When my friend said she were going to call John, I said, oh, John can't help me. But she said, no, I'm going to call him.
My name is Mary. My world was turned upside down when my husband was arrested in March 2003 for political reasons. My husband and I were both active in the opposition party in Uganda, the FDC, Forum for Democratic Change. After his arrest, they started threatening me. I had to go into hiding. After a while, it became too dangerous for the people who were hiding us. So the FDC members arranged for me to leave the country. But then they said I couldn't take my children. It was too risky and too expensive also. They were 6 and 3 at the time. That was the big one. Having to leave my children. It was very, very hard. I remember kissing my babies. I traveled to London as someone's wife. He was a stranger. He took me to the Home Office in Croydon and I applied for asylum. 2 months later, I was dispersed to Glasgow. I was 8 months pregnant with twins. Ha! I was huge. And they put me on a 10-hour bus journey to Scotland. I got emergency accommodation straight away. But when the girl showed me my room, I said, bunk beds. Ah, I don't think I can manage that.
That's the only bed available.
I cried. I have cried a lot in this country. A lot. When the babies were born, they gave me some clothes for the baby, and they managed to get me some baby cots. I didn't get much sleep when the babies got this colic. Oh my God, a nightmare. The two of them crying. I didn't know what to do with both of them. I had to cry with them. Really, I thought I was dead. And all this time, I couldn't make any contact with my other children in Uganda. For the first 3 months, I just had £38 a week to live on for me and the babies. When I finally got some money for the babies, they were 3 months old. My life got better in Glasgow, little by little. 2 years passed, I went to college, I got to know a lot of people, made some friends and led the choir in the church. My first asylum application had failed. They said they didn't believe my story, that I was politically active. And they said,
if they wanted to kill you, they'd have killed you at the time they came to your house. They wouldn't have just tried to scare you away.
Ack! So many things the Home Office said to me. The fact that my husband was in prison and that was why I was in fear for my safety was not mentioned anywhere. My first appeal failed, then my second appeal had failed. And not long after that, I was downgraded.
Immigration!
They knocked on my door at 6:45. And there was immigration. And behind them, the police. They had body armor. There were 8 of them for 1 woman and 2 babies. I just looked at them. I knew what they had come for, and I knew that the first thing I must do was phone someone. But they came straight in and went ahead of me and went straight to the phone. I wasn't even dressed, so they chose my clothes. 2 guys started stuffing clothes into my bags. My little boy was sleeping. The girl woke up when they came in the sitting room. That was frightening for her. Then they were saying on their walkie-talkies, there's no problem here. Because I didn't give them a fight. I just sat there and I cried. I kept saying, why do you do this? Why do you do this? And the woman escort kept saying,
I can't believe I'm doing this. I have a son this age. I can't believe I left my Wayne sleeping and I'm waking up yours.
I had a feeling she hadn't done this before. She was sitting next to me and she kept saying,
I'm going to cry. I think I'm going to cry.
Can I please call someone?
No, you're not supposed to.
My solicitor told me if something happens, the first thing I should do is call him. I'm not leaving until I call my solicitor.
Then we'll use force. Up to you, but you're going.
The policeman who took my statement, he don't even put his number. He just put a signature. I can't read his signature. He is supposed to print his name and have his number. Anyway, at the station I was asking them all these things and they said, we'll just put you in the cell until you calm down and then we'll talk about this. They already knew what they were going to do. I was in the cell for one night and the next day I said to the officer, can you show me where I can have a wash? And he said,
you have to mop the floor first before you can have a wash.
And the other officers there, they were laughing. When they finally said I could have a wash, they threw a towel on the floor of the cell and put me with a lady, and the lady was watching me have my wash. Before they took me to the airport in the morning, the people at the station said, Jan came and he left this for you. £100 to take home with you. I was gonna cry. At the airport, the Home Office man had my documents in his hands and the doctor just looked at me and my eye and he said to the Home Office man,
she's not fit to travel. She's not going anywhere.
She's going on this flight.
How can she? She needs a doctor's assistance. Medical assistance. You have to cancel it.
Then the Home Office guy, he took a tissue and rolled it up and gave it to me to hold for the blood to drip from my eye. They bring me to the airport again the next day and the next day they just keep driving me there but no treatment for me eye.
Meanwhile, I'd absolutely no idea what to do. Then my new cleaner gave me the name of a London immigration solicitor who had Angela transferred to a detention centre, which gave her some additional time to prepare her case. Unfortunately, he did not present any of our additional evidence to the court, so all our appeals were rejected. And on the 10th of October, there was a fourth removal attempt.
They had me on the plane and I said, I'm not going. And one of them started to hit me. The other one was kneeling in my back. So I said to the air hostess, can you help me, please? She told the Home Office man to release me. So they put me in handcuffs. And they put me back in the van and took me back to detention with my face still all swelled up.
From Glasgow, they took us all the way to Yarl's Wood Detention Centre in Bedford, in the back of the van, me and the babies, 8 hours. In the back, the van was blacked out so you can't see anything. It was difficult with the kids on such a long journey, and I didn't have any food to give them. When they made a stop, they came and asked,
do you want anything?
If you have some water, can you give us some? Then they gave us small things, so small. They gave the kids chocolate, but other than that, they didn't talk to us. By the time we had reached Yarl's Wood, they had decided to take us straight to the plane. But then my son was sick. He threw up.
We can't take a sick child, and you know that. The whole van is covered in sick.
So they left us at Yarl's Wood. We were there for 10 days. And that was terrible. It was terrible. I wonder how people can live like that. Oh, it's terrible. The memory is so bad. You know, ringing a bell for you to go and eat. Ringing a bell for you to go and do that. Ah, everything is for a bell. You're in the dining room. You're not supposed to take food out. And you sit and you see your kids are not eating. And you're not allowed to take food to give them later. My kids got so small. Oh, God.
John came to see me every week during those 5 months I was in detention in Yarl's Wood, all the way from Telford to Bedford. When I see John drive and come and look for me for so many miles, I can't stop crying and saying, I can't believe you do this. They would say to me, Angela, you have a visitor. I say, I know, it's John.
You know, they won't allow you to bring chocolates or flowers in there to the ladies. So I went in there one night and I said, now you can't take flowers, but can you take a wooden ornament?
Are there any sharp points in that?
No, nothing sharp. It's all wood.
Okay, then.
So I brought in a bunch of artificial roses made out of wood and plastic.
It was horrible in there because you witnessed people trying to kill themselves. It's horrible. There were lots of kids. You just can't believe it. Kids being detained. Kids in prison. Sometimes I was sorry for myself in a way, but kids and mothers breastfeeding? It's rough. You don't know when you're going to the airport. Sometimes, you know, knock, knock, pack, you're going to the airport.
Finally, I was released after 10 days. They just throw you out. I was supposed to travel back to Scotland now with 2 babies, a pram, and 3 big bags. When I was on the train, a lady came round to check our tickets. She was young, a white girl, and she asked me, just being friendly.
Where have you just been then?
What could I say? She asked me so innocent, I saw it in her face. I said, not far from here, but a place maybe you don't know about. She asked me a bit more, so I told her a bit about being in detention.
Why? What did you do?
Nothing. I just want protection.
Do we do this in Britain? Do we lock people like you up? And babies?
Yes. In places like Yow's Wood.
My God. What did you do again?
Nothing. I came to this country and asked for asylum. But they refused me.
I thought prisons are for people who are criminals or something. I'm so, so sorry. How are you going to manage with all this stuff?
Ha. I have no idea.
Wait. Let me make some calls.
Then what she did was, she took down my destination, and then she started phoning all the stops I was going to.
She has 3 bags, a pram, and 2 babies, so please help her.
So every station I changed at, there were 2 guys waiting for me. They came on the train and called...
Mary!
Mary!
And then they had these trolleys, and they put my things on them, and they gave me refreshments on the way.
In November, we heard they were going to try and remove Angela again.
November 4th.
On the 2nd of November, I thought, I've got to do something. But what? Angela had met a solicitor in Yarswood who said, you want to go for a judicial review? So this solicitor wrote out a few pieces of paper which had to be presented to the High Court in London. Then she wanted £3,000 to do some more work. I said, I haven't got that kind of money.
Well, look, I've done the papers. That's all I'm doing. You need to take these papers to the High Court and present them.
Well, there was no way I could go to London at such short notice. So I thought, who do I know in London? I knew one man who used to live in London who I hadn't spoken to in 5 years. I rang him up. Hi, Ross. I'm pulling a favour.
Which one?
I've got to get some documents from a solicitor in London to the High Court. Now, I can't give you all the details now, but literally, it's a person's life that's banking on this.
Where's the solicitor?
Hampstead.
I'm in Hampstead now. Where in Hampstead?
Downshire Hill.
I can just see the end of the street from here. I'll be there in 2 minutes.
Ross got the documents. The following day, he was at the court, waited for the judge, got the stamp on it, and kept Angela off the aeroplane. You know, they were so certain Angela'd be deported, they'd even taken her name off the computer.
And Ross was one of those who said, send them all back.
He changed, though, completely. One of his friends, who's a specialist at a hospital, is trying to get Angela on a nursing course. Well, that's what we're hoping for at the moment. So, another conversion. Anyway, what happened was, I'd written to the High Court judge basically saying you're a right idiot coming up with this decision because of this, that and the other. And the next morning, I had a letter from the manager of the High Court in London saying we'd been given our judicial review and now we could put in any information needed to strengthen the claim. And they told me exactly how to go about it. So I bring a bottle of vintage port over to my nephew's place. He'd qualified as a barrister before becoming a priest. We got stuck in. It took us 7 blooming hours to get through this thing. But we did it. And we sent it off to the court with Angela's medical records. We pulled in everything we could.
When I got back to Glasgow, I was moved to a flat. And that's when I met my neighbour, Linda. She loved the kids. was always giving them toys and chatting to them when we were both on our balconies. She never locked the back door onto her balcony, so she could slip in through mine when she sometimes locked herself out. And that's what I remember the day they came for me the second time. 6 o'clock in the morning, there was a banging on the door.
Immigration!
I just grabbed the kids and went out from my balcony onto Linda's. Her door was unlocked. I went inside and locked the door behind me. Linda! Linda! She couldn't hear me. She was asleep. So I knocked on her bedroom door. Linda, immigration is here. Then she came out and said...
What? Who?
Immigration.
Oh my God, my passport. Where? Which door?
I think she was confused. I said, my door.
Oh, that's what that banging is.
Terrible noise was coming from my place. They were talking into their walkie-talkies, saying that we were not in or something like that. Then they went to my back door and smashed it down. They went out onto the balcony. We were shaking now. What if they break your door, Linda?
If they touch that door, I'm calling the police.
We just kept quiet. I was lying on her bed now with the kids, and we kept them under the covers. Then we heard banging on Linda's door.
Can you come to the door, please? Come to the door, please!
We all stayed under the covers in the dark.
We're immigration officers.
I don't need any immigration. I don't deal with you people.
Can you open the door, please? Let us in.
I will not open the door.
By this time, I was on my phone and I was calling people. I called Margaret from the Glasgow campaign to welcome refugees and asylum seekers. They had started this rota to watch out for dawn raids, looking out for vans in the early morning and letting people know.
We know about it. We're on our way. Don't worry, we're nearly there.
A few minutes later, she called again.
We're just outside. We're coming up. You were on the 12th floor, right?
Then... they all came in. There were like 60 people, all different ages. I knew some of them, but not all. Some were from church. They took buses. They took taxis. Taxis were pouring out people into Plain Street that morning at 6 a.m. After some time, Margaret called me again.
Most of them have gone now. There's only one immigration official and a policeman, and they've called somebody in to seal up the broken doors.
I couldn't get into my flat after they had sealed it, so I couldn't get any of my things. I put on Linda's partner's shoes. He gave me his sneakers. They were so big, and we were laughing. But what could we do? Because Linda wears a size 4. And I'm a size 5. But her partner wears size 9 or something. Then we were interviewed, Linda and me, for BBC. Because BBC came that early morning. After that, the kids and I stayed with different friends. I've had so much support here in Scotland. There's always someone doing something for me.
Then a girl in Yarlswood told me I could apply for bail myself. I had to fill out these forms.
Do you know, I'm full of admiration for this lady. She will forgive me for saying so, but she's not completely literate, having had to leave school at 13. But although the staff at Yarlswood, her solicitor and the Home Office all said that she would never be allowed bail, Angela still had the courage to complete her application and send it to the court. Her hearing was set for the 23rd of December.
The night before, I didn't sleep. I kept praying in my room with the other detained ladies. When I got to the court, I was the first one of the day. I was so nervous.
Angela Phillips, please stand. Read out the bail application. Don't rush, just take your time.
I was looking at the judge and I was saying to God, use her right now, you understand? Use her. The immigration gentleman was just a kid, wasn't he, John? Looked like 20 or something. He said to the judge, I'm not supposed to get bail. And I said, Your Honour, not everything on the paper is right, what immigration said.
OK, Angela, take your time and tell me what's right.
I started telling her what's right. I started telling her what's wrong. Then the judge said,
Angela, why do you think you should get bail?
Your Honour, I'm locked up nearly 6 months, no medical assistance. And no female should be locked up for that long in a detention centre. I'm asking you if you can give me bail.
Do you have a surety?
Yes. He's sitting behind me.
I don't know, because the Home Office is opposing bail.
And there I was, sitting there, tears running down my face. And John went to her and said,
Your Honour, if your daughter or sister or mother had been subjected to similar violence, you would probably have supported them taking very similar action to that which my friend Angela has taken. That is, deciding to hide rather than return to certain death. If you had a sister or any family member fleeing a country where so many things happened to them, and they came to our country, would you send them back to that country? I'm asking you that.
Don't let me down, Angela. Don't let your surety down. I'm giving you bail. Sign the paper.
I was sitting there with the security officer sat alongside me. And they were just looking. And they were crying.
Police visited Linda later and told her they were going to charge her with obstruction of justice. I said to her, Linda, I've disrupted your life. Now you're going to court.
Mary, don't worry about it. I'm fine. There's nothing to worry about. I'm all right.
Aren't you scared?
Mary, I'm okay. I'm worried about you. Don't worry about me.
She's a strong lady. She's a lovely lady. She really is a people person.
When I walked out of that courtroom, everyone said, How does it feel? I said, The only thing I can say is, God is good. I couldn't sleep. Jan's wife used to come and knock on my door and say, What's wrong with you? You're crying out in your sleep.
I told my wife that I was going to this bail hearing. I said, The solicitors, the Home Office, everyone says Angela can't get bail. But I'm going anyway, because she's a nice lady. And I've gone to all this trouble to get it to court. She said, Fair enough, try and get her out. But then I arrived with this black lady on the doorstep. Well,
I stayed with them about 7 months.
But it was tricky. That's why I rented Angela a flat. And that's why I'm still working. I was supposed to retire at Christmas. I can't afford to retire because I'm paying for her. I was 66 in December.
He comes to my church now.
Yes, I've always been a Baptist. But when I became friends with Angela, I said, I'll try a Jamaican church. Do you know, I enjoyed it so much, I decided to keep going. I joined in with the singing, the clapping and the dancing. The place is rocking. It's amazing.
Sometimes when I look at John, I just burst out crying. I say, you should stop work. And he says, how can I stop work and leave you like this? He says, don't worry. When all this is over, you can help me.
Yeah, that's right. She says she's going to push me around in my bath chair. Wherever I need to go, she'll push me. Anyway, the next thing, a year after the first removal attempt, Angela had an operation on her eye. I picked her up from the hospital, took her to the police station because she had to report there once a week, and I arrested her there and then, no warning at all.
My face was still all swollen from the operation. I said to the Home Office man, Oh my God, why are you so wicked, man? At least wait till my eye heals.
They gave me this letter, dated 2 or 3 weeks previously, saying that Angela's claim had been rejected. There was no appeal and she was being removed on the 7th of August. So at this point, I was panicking. On the 7th, they took Angela to the airport, sat her on the perimeter road all day, and I honestly think they were trying to get her to the aeroplane without going past the doctor, because they would have stopped the flight. I'm convinced of it. Anyway, we'd got this great immigration lawyer by then, Paul. He'd contacted a barrister at the High Court, and they managed to get an agreement to apply for another judicial review, which means they couldn't deport Angela, as she'd have a date to appear before a tribunal. They all say it must be wonderful to win the lottery. But after I'd been on that telephone most of the 7th to various people, knowing full well that Angela was right by that aeroplane, when Paul rang and said, "John, there's a judicial review," it was better than winning the lottery. So, now Angela's back home, back in her flat. Some weekends, if the family has something organised I don't want to go to, I take her out for the day. I take her to different parts of the country each time. Oh, I took her to Bournemouth once. It was really funny.
When I see the sea, I just ran. And I said, "There's sea in England."
Angela didn't take her bathing costume, but she couldn't resist. She went in up to her neck, dressing everything.
It's a long time. I want some freedom in my life. I just want them to give me that freedom. Let me go and work and have some money in my pocket. I can't tell you when it will be when my kids are sleeping there and I'm sleeping here, you understand? That's not in my reach. For 6 years I haven't slept with my kids near me. So that day when I can sleep with them, what you gonna expect me to feel? When I can sit and see the smiles on their faces and say, "Hello, baby," and touch them. And we sit and eat a meal. I just want everything to finish, man. Ah, let them just do what they want to do.
Oh, you can't say that, Angela. After all we've gone through.
Yeah, I know, but John, it's me. It's just me. I can't sit here for the next 5 years, John, and not work and depend on you. I want a job so that I can say, "John, come, we're going for dinner," and open my purse and pay for it. You understand me?
My children in Uganda are not happy with me. They say that I told them I was going to come for them and that I lied to them. They always say that. I lied to them. You're torn when you're an asylum seeker. You are torn completely. My solicitor made a fresh claim in February 2007, and then a few months later, we were called for an interview, which turned out not to be an interview because 5 minutes later, I was presented with our indefinite leave to remain. I was speechless. Didn't know whether to cry or to shout for joy. But I had mixed feelings for sure, both bitter and sweet. It was over. Now, I have been moved to another community, and I'm trying to make friends and fit in, and I'm looking for work. It's not easy. My dream is to bring my other children here to live with me, become a British citizen, get a job in maybe marketing. I'm almost finished my business course. If the political situation in Uganda changes, I would like to go home. But all the time, my twins are becoming more and more Scottish. They speak with a Scottish accent. And sometimes, with their friends, they speak so fast, I can't understand them. When they are born, I called them after Saint Michael. They were named Michael and Michelle. I told them to be my guardian angels.
I've been in 4 detention centres in this country. They take me to the airport 6 times. I got attacked in my eye. I got abused in the police station. I got beaten on the plane. Now I'm waiting to see if they let me stay here or if they will still want to send me back. But where would I be without this man? My friend used to say, "Angela, God sent that man John to you. He used to hold the bin for me and I would throw the rubbish in. Now he's supporting me. I used to push the Hoover around his office and now he's supporting me. God inspired her to call him that day.
My friend Angela has suffered at the hands of incompetent legal representation and an uncaring, biased police force. However, I personally have found the court system to be fair and helpful, if only the lies and distortions of the Home Office can be exposed. So, take courage and try. Like me, you may just be lucky enough to help a desperate fellow human being. If a black country lad like me can do it, anyone can.
The script for Asylum Dialogues was written by Sonia Linden and Christine Bacon. Angela was played by Rosalind Wright, John, James Benson, Mary, Ivana Morias, Linda, Blue Merrick, and Ross, Danny Metcalf. The music was written and performed by Dave Randall, and the play was directed by Clear Langton. This radio play was produced by Ice and Fire Theatre and Bradford Community Broadcasting for Refugee Week 2011 and is available for download and broadcasting free of charge at www.iceandfire.co.uk or www.bcbradio.co.uk.